At Public.com, you can earn 5.1% APY with a high-yield cash account. And while we can't say it's officially the highest interest rate out there, we can say this. It's higher than Robinhood, SoFi, Wealthfront, Capital One, and the big banks, too. Ready to start earning 5.1% APY on your cash? Check out the high-yield cash account on Public.com. This is paid for by Public Investing. 5.1% APY as of March 26, 2024, and is subject to change. A high-yield cash account is a secondary brokerage account with Public Investing, member FINRA/SIPC. Funds from this account are automatically deposited into partner banks where they earn a variable interest and are eligible for FDIC insurance. Neither Public Investing nor any of its affiliates is a bank. U.S. only. Learn more at public.com/disclosure/high-yield-account.
I say this not to alarm you in any way, but some of the finest economic minds of this generation are looking at the lack of inflation we have right now and saying, yeah, I don't get it either. From American Public Media, this is Marketplace. In Los Angeles, I'm Kai Rizdahl. Monday, April 29th. Good as always to have you along, everybody. We are going to do a little bit of tomorrow's news today to get us going this afternoon. Tomorrow and Wednesday, Fed Chair Jay Powell and the rest of the gang at the Federal Open Market Committee are going to be meeting on interest rates. And to be really, really clear here, there ain't nobody actually expecting them to raise rates. But there is a thing happening in this economy that's got a whole lot of people scratching their heads and which plays directly into what the Fed is going to do on rates. We got numbers on consumer spending in this economy today, way up in March, the best in 10 years, surely a sign of a healthy and growing economy, which it is right now. We told you about first quarter GDP growth on Friday, if you remember that. The head-scratching part is this. Inflation, by the Federal Reserve's preferred measure, something called PCE, personal consumption expenditures, was basically a no-show in this morning's report. Excluding food and energy, it was flat for the month. And you would think, in the aforementioned healthy and growing economy, that you would have a healthy rate of inflation as well. So Marketplace's Mitchell Hartman explains what's going on with inflation and why it matters.
Most of us think of inflation as a bad thing. Prices rise, eroding our paycheck's purchasing power. Like back in 1974, when President Ford pledged to Congress,
"We must whip inflation right now."
Today, the slogan might be, could you whip up a little more inflation, please? Sam Stovall at CFRA Research explains that stagnant or falling prices over a sustained period can cause spending to plummet.
Consumers might decide, well, I won't spend my money this month. I'll wait until next month when I might even get a better deal.
And weak inflation can be a sign of weak demand. If consumers were beating down the doors to buy stuff, sellers would have some leverage to raise prices. Broadly speaking, that's not happening now, says economist Dan North at business insurer Euler Hermes, for a bunch of reasons, including
global trade in terms of lots of lower-priced goods coming in from China and Mexico.
Karen Patru at Federal Financial Analytics sees one more warning sign.
The majority of the population are already heavily indebted. They're continuing to buy only what they need, struggling to afford it. And that's why inflation is as low as it is.
Some economists think the Fed may need to lower interest rates again to stimulate demand and try to push inflation back up. I'm Mitchell Hartman for Marketplace.
There is a little bit of point-counterpoint in the hospitality industry to report on today. First of all, Airbnb says it's thinking about getting into more formal hoteling. It's going to take commercial properties and rent them out. At the same time, the Wall Street Journal reports that Marriott is going to start its own Airbnb-like thing for renting out vacation homes. Cozy atmosphere, neighborhood vibe, without the sometimes dodgy Wi-Fi or clogged sink one can find in an Airbnb. Marketplace's Megan McCarty-Carino has more on what it might take for Marriott to compete in the home-sharing market that is so disrupting its business.
Marriott's been pointing out in a recent commercial that there are a lot of ways to spend the night with them.
Bon boy.
For Tony, there's Ritz-Carlton. For hip, there's W. For family-friendly, there's Springfield Suites. And for a plain old hotel room, there's Sheraton.
30 hotel brands, endless experiences.
Adding home rentals to that ecosystem makes a lot of sense, says Howard Adler, a professor of hotel management at Purdue University.
It really benefits them because they're expanding their huge network already.
Adler says home rentals could allow travelers to stay under a Marriott roof for every trip they take for business or pleasure and get loyalty points. But there's a catch. Much of Marriott's hotel business is independently owned. Morningstar analyst Dan Wasilek says home sharing may cannibalize some of that business.
There is some, you know, risk that they're alienating the traditional hotel franchisees that are joining the Marriott brand.
Renting out private houses, even high-end ones, also poses risks. Homes and hotels are built with different safety standards. Arun Sundarrajan, a professor of business at NYU, says that's one example of why it's going to be difficult for Marriott and other hotel chains to compete head-on with Airbnb.
I think Airbnb has made deeper inroads into the hotel business than any of the hotel chains will into the home-sharing business.
Andy says Marriott's interest in the market makes the home sharing business look more attractive as Airbnb prepares for its IPO later this year. I'm Megan McCarty-Carino for Marketplace.
This was a big weekend for the National Rifle Association, and not in a way the group is probably pleased with. A very public leadership fight at its annual meeting, and now the New York State Attorney General's office is investigating the group, financially in particular, possibly threatening the NRA's tax-exempt status in New York. Now, granted, this is a state AG looking into a state issue, but there could be repercussions for the group's federal tax status as well. So we asked Marketplace's Mariel Segarra to look into and explain what exactly tax-exempt status means and how an organization might lose it.
Groups that are tax-exempt don't have to pay certain kinds of taxes, like income taxes. Charities are the most well-known example.
Schools, churches, museums, organizations that when you give to them, you also get a tax-deductible contribution.
Miranda Fleischer at the University of San Diego School of Law says charities are a type of tax-exempt group known as 501c3s. But there are other ways to get exempted from taxes. Groups that promote social welfare qualify under a different section of the law, 501c4. Philip Hackney at the University of Pittsburgh School of Law says these groups follow different rules. You usually can't deduct contributions to them, and they're allowed to get involved in politics.
A lot of organizations will form a 501c4 in order to lobby, in order to engage in politics that they can't as a charity.
The NRA falls under this category, but it has a 501c3 foundation, too. An organization can lose its tax-exempt status if it, say, does something illegal or pays its leaders excessive salaries. But Manoj Viswanathan, who teaches law at the University of California, says IRS audits are rare.
The enforcement arm for tax-exempt organizations at the IRS is underfunded and not as active as it probably should be.
But states have their own laws on tax exemption, and they can investigate groups, too. That's what's happening in the case of the NRA. I'm Mariel Segarra for Marketplace.
On Wall Street this Monday, you know what you get if a stock index goes up after a record high? Well, yes, that's right. You get more record highs. We'll have the details when we do the numbers. Congressional leaders, Democratic congressional leaders, I should say, House Speaker Nancy Pelosi and Senate Minority Leader Chuck Schumer are going down to the White House this week for a meeting with the president on infrastructure, the not-so-great state of America's roads, bridges, and highways. Also, dams and locks on the nation's waterways, which got us thinking about the Mississippi River, and Austin Golding, one of our go-tos, the president of Golding Barge Lines in Vicksburg, Mississippi. So, since we were thinking about him, we got him on the phone. Austin, it's good to talk to you again.
Great to talk to you, Kai.
First of all, feels like it's been a while. So, how's business?
Business has picked up. The economy is improving, as well as our specific economies on the water. We're seeing more cargoes, and business has improved.
Let me ask you, though, about some of the more tangible things, like are you getting more product on your barges? Are you using bigger flotillas of barges, those kinds of things?
Well, right now we're actually dealing with high water, mostly flood conditions up and down the Mississippi River.
Yeah, of course.
And high water means less cargo per barge. Hmm. So we've actually had a little higher risk profile and a little less cargo per tow coming down the river. You know, it looks like in June we may get some relief, but here the next 4 or 5 weeks are going to be a little bit longer to go.
Other thing I wanted to talk to you about was a trip you made out to Capitol Hill a couple of months ago, I guess. Listeners who are curious as to what you look like can just go on YouTube and search your congressional testimony. Tell me why you were up there and first of all, what you thought about the congressional hearing process.
Well, it was certainly interesting to be part of this Senate hearing. We were there discussing the Jones Act, infrastructure, and workforce development. And I thought all three were very productive discussions. I can tell you, Kai, I was very nervous. My wife told me that when she gave me a hug afterwards, I had sweated completely through my suit. But I came away that they genuinely are looking for answers to how to solve those problems.
That's good to hear. And I will say you look good. So, you know, sweat or not, you look good. Tell me, though, what the Jones Act is and why that matters to you.
So the Jones Act is a longstanding law that protects American marine interests. It basically, in its purest sense and simplest sense, says that anything that carries American products from one American port to another has to be built in America, owned by an American citizen, and crewed by Americans. So it is a not only is an economic protection, but it's also a domestic national security protection law.
And I guess the deal behind your testimony is that Congress is thinking about the Trump administration wants to change the Jones Act. Is that right?
Well, there's some debate around waivers for certain ports, such as Puerto Rico and the East Coast, to be able to use internationally flagged vessels that would, in essence, be a cheaper option. The debate around these is really a debate around what's it worth to outsource more American jobs elsewhere. It doesn't align with the messaging out of the administration, and I think that the push is coming from people that for an increased profit margin would be willing to outsource an American industry and American jobs.
This is a little sideways. Where do you get your labor force? I mean, if I want to be a barge captain for Golding Barge Lines, I mean, where do I come from? Like a technical college or something?
So most of our applicants come directly out of high school or shortly thereafter. A typical applicant is between 18 and 25 years old. After 5 to 10 years of experience, you can make $150,000 a year. If you can get past the sacrifice and past the absence from home, that's the type of payday that's waiting on you.
Do you find the tight labor market that we have now, is that a problem for you?
Well, it is a tight labor market, and if you ask my HR department specifically, they'd probably be nodding, yes, it is tight, but there's still plenty of people out there, Kai, with plenty of talent ready to go to work.
Austin Golding, he runs the Golding Barge Lines down in Vicksburg, Mississippi. Austin, thanks a lot. We'll talk to you soon.
Thank you, Kai. Thank you very much.
We, that is, most of humanity, have been doing our darndest to get rid of bacteria for a very long time now. Commercially, at least for decades, with antibacterial soaps and sprays and whatnot. But science has gotten itself back in the game with a boost from companies like Clorox and SC Johnson, which are putting their money behind startups bringing us bacteria that could actually be good for human health. The origin story, as it were, is told by Carolina Winter in Bloomberg Business Week. Welcome to the program.
Thanks for having me.
Tell me, would you, first of all, about this guy, David Whitlock, and the company he started, AO Biome.
That's right. It was started by a really fascinating guy. He's an MIT-trained inventor who became obsessed with a specific type of bacteria and spent all his money, nearly $500,000, and moved into his car for 4.5 years before finding investors. Now he's raised $100 million and is doing lots of clinical trials to see if his bacteria actually affects health the way he thinks it does.
Yeah, I guess we kind of buried the lead that this guy has raised $100 million. Let's back up, though, and talk about what has happened to the marketing of bacteria in this economy. We have all been taught, as I said in the introduction, that you got to wash your hands and you got to clean up because bacteria are bad for you. And now not only science, but also corporate America is discovering maybe that's not the case.
Yeah, it's a really interesting change of events. You should probably keep washing your hands.
Well,
studies show that that is pretty important for health. But the human microbiome is incredibly important for our health. And we've really decimated the diversity and the populations of microbes that live in and on us. And it's partly because we have such, you know, poor diets, it's antibiotics, more C-section births, and importantly, also less contact with nature, dirt, and animals.
So AOBiome and Mr. Whitlock and now other companies, just to sort of get to the productization of this thing, just for one example, there's like a spray that he has invented that he sprays on himself that fosters good bacteria, I guess?
Yeah, so he's obsessed with this one specific type of ammonia oxidizing bacteria that takes the ammonia in your sweat and it turns it into molecules that are very good for the human health. But that's the idea. That's the spray. And then they also have a number of other products that are microbiome neutral, meaning that they won't kill the microbiome,
right,
the good microbes.
Right. So look, how long before this becomes a curiosity and, frankly, a little bit of an ew factor thing to mainstream that we go to, you know, the local Piggly Wiggly and buy?
You know, I think it's already happening. The number of studies coming out linking microbiomes that are off balance to everything from depression to cancer are really surprising. And people have considered the microbiome to be almost like another organ that people have to start considering for health. Mm-hmm. And I would say that, you know, if you're looking at supplements, there's no regulation for those.
Right, right.
Same thing with cosmetics. And so it's hard to know if something is good or not. So it's really good that companies like AOBiome are actually doing clinical trials.
Yeah. Well, let's get anecdotal here. You yourself have used some or at least one of these kinds of products, right?
I have. Yeah, no, I've been fascinated with this company AOBiome for a while, and I've used their product, and I do like it. I never stopped showering. I never went to the extremes, but it works differently for everyone, and that actually will be a
part of it. Yeah.
And actually, talking to some of the scientists, it's really interesting. They think what's going to happen is that tools where people can test their own microbiome will become more available, and they'll actually be able to see for themselves how various products affect them, and maybe they'll kind of be able to customize based on that, which will be interesting.
Yeah, totally interesting. Carolina Winter, she's a staff writer at Bloomberg Businessweek, writing most recently about bacteria on our bodies. Carolina, thanks a lot. Appreciate your time.
Thanks for having me.
Coming up,
they've got sort of a forest theme, and they have crickets sounding in there.
It's a bathroom, y'all, an office bathroom. But first, let's do the numbers. Dow Industrial's up 11 today. We'll call that flat percentage-wise, 26,554. The NASDAQ added 15 points, about a tenth percent, 8161. The S&P 500 up 3 points, tenth percent, 29.43. Boeing gave back 0.4% today. The company's CEO faced tough questions this morning at the aircraft company's annual meeting after two fatal crashes, as you know, involving its 737 MAX jetliner. Stuck pretty much to his talking points, did CEO Dennis Muilenburg. Marriott drifted down 0.3% today, as we told you. Marriott going after Airbnb. Hilton Worldwide off 0.8%. Choice Hotels International rode up 0.2%. Bond prices fell. Yield on the 10-year Treasury note rose to 2.52%. You're listening to Marketplace.
Now your ideas don't have to wait. Now they have everything they need to come to life. Dell Technologies and Intel are creating technology that loves ideas, loves expanding your business, evolving your passions. We push what technology can do, so great ideas can happen right now. Find out how to bring your ideas to life at Dell.com. Welcome to Now.
Looking for the highest interest rate on your cash? At Public.com, you can earn 5.1% APY with a high-yield cash account. And while we can't say it's officially the highest interest rate out there, we can say this. It's a higher rate than Robinhood, a higher rate than SoFi, a higher rate than Marcus, a higher rate than Wealthfront, frankly, a higher rate than Capital One, a higher rate than Ally, a higher rate than Barclays, a way higher rate than Bank of America and Chase, a higher rate than Citi, Wells Fargo, Discover, and it's a higher rate than American Express, too. So if you want to start earning 5.1% APY on your cash, check out public.com. We can't say it's the highest interest rate, but it's pretty darn up there. This is paid for by public investing, 5.1% APY as of March 26, 2024, and is subject to change. A high-yield cash account is a secondary brokerage account with public investing, member FINRA/SIPC. Funds from this account are automatically deposited into partner banks where they earn a variable interest and are eligible for FDIC insurance. Neither public investing nor any of its affiliates is a bank. U.S. only. Learn more at public.com/disclosure/high-yield-account.
This Marketplace podcast is supported by Gusto. Look, payday's awesome, but running payroll, calculating taxes and deductions, staying compliant, that's not easy. Unless, of course, you have Gusto. Gusto is a simple online payroll and benefits tool built for small businesses like yours. Gusto gets your team paid while automatically filing your payroll taxes. Plus, you can offer benefits like 401k, health insurance, and workers' comp. Just for listening today, you also get 3 months free. Go to gusto.com/marketplace. That's gusto.com/marketplace.
This is Marketplace. I'm Kai Rizdahl. Pretty sure I haven't said Brexit on this program in a good couple of 3 weeks. But with Parliament back from its Easter recess and Prime Minister Theresa May in continuing negotiations with just about everybody to get some kind of withdrawal agreement done, Brexit, Brexit, Brexit. As things stand now, the UK could leave the European Union at any time between now and October 31st, which really just translates the word Brexit into uncertainty, uncertainty, uncertainty. And so we arrive at today's installment of our series, My Economy, stories of people making a go of it. This one from a British importer.
My name's Paolo Arrigo. I'm the director of Frankie Seeds, and I live in London and with my family, two children and wonderful wife. What we specialise in is Italian varieties. There's purple peppers there, there's chilies of all shapes and sizes. As a company, as an importer, normally we just order seeds from Italy and they arrive on a lorry. There's no paperwork, there's no barriers, there's no delays. Now, because of this whole Brexit process, we've had to prepare for a no-deal Brexit. We've had to apply for an EORI, which is a type of importation document. We've had to get a customs broker, like when we import goods from America or China. Now, all of these things have a cost to them, and that means that we will have to put our prices up. Guess what? If the price of seed goes up, the price of food goes up. This is flight school 101 stuff. Britain is not self-sufficient. It's estimated that less than half of the seeds in domestic seed packets actually come from Britain. And the remainder, you know, come from the EU, China, India. They come from all over, but we don't have a big hobby seed industry in this country anymore. So a bit of British humour, we came up with a Brexit vegetable growing survival kit. And basically, it's a selection of vegetable seeds. They're varieties that you can sow all year. We've got some shelling beans, French beans there, or pole beans, as they would be called in America. We've got some peas there, and peas can be preserved in jars. They can be eaten fresh. That was the thinking behind the kit, to have something to sow or harvest every single month of the year, varieties that can be preserved. We came up with the idea one Saturday night after a drink, and it was really a bit of a joke. But we mocked up the label. We launched it with a single tweet on the Sunday morning. And we've sold hundreds. We've almost sold 1,000 now, just in the last 9 weeks. But actually, it's been so successful that we've been thinking of doing another Armageddon vegetable growing survival kit, which has hit a lot of hilarity in the business. But then Brexiteers always did say that there would be Brexit opportunities for business. But I don't think they thought it would be like this.
Paolo Arrigo, courtesy of our colleagues at the BBC over in London. Let us know how your economy is doing, would you? There's a place you can do that at marketplace.org. We just did a big office renovation here at Marketplace World Headquarters. The place had, frankly, gotten a little rundown looking. Included, of course, were the restrooms, which until I read a piece in the Wall Street Journal today, I had thought were pretty nice. I mean, they are the new ones, but it turns out that really upscale office washrooms are the new thing in corporate America. Keiko Morris wrote about it for the Wall Street Journal. Welcome to the program.
Thank you.
What has happened that office bathrooms are now the thing, I guess?
Well, there are a couple things going on here. One, you have had for a very long time the hospitality industry really elevating the bathroom design in public places. And people have become used to that. So we're talking about hotels, restaurants. Mm-hmm. And at the same time, you have office design becoming elevated. People are creating these open spaces, but also trying to create more comfortable, homey spaces.
Yeah.
And so part of the office design also is that more and more people are getting crammed into the open office space, and folks are realizing they need these spaces of respite.
Wow. Describe them for me. Give me. I mean, you obviously walked around and looked at a bunch of these. What are they? What's a typical nice new office bathroom look like?
So, of course, we highlighted the ones that really, really, you know, went to town with these. So, for instance, WeWork has restrooms on one of its headquarters floors. It's sort of like a Nordic spa, dark, with video screens. You can watch loops of surfing competitions. We should mention Airbnb has some bathrooms where they've got sort of a forest theme and they have crickets sounding in there.
Wow.
And then we also have bathrooms that have playlists.
Wow.
So you can rock out.
Should you be so inclined. Back to the Airbnb thing, though. Didn't they? There was one. Yeah. They put like video games in there and people were just spending too much time in the bathroom. Is that the deal?
Yes. So there, you can have too much fun with these designs.
Right.
So, so one was, a retro 80s video game design, and they actually had, Mario Brothers in there, and, and they decided to take it out.
Where did Joe go? He's been in the bathroom half an hour. Anyway. So look, down to brass tacks though. This is an issue now. Restrooms are an issue for would-be tenants and in theory would-be employees, right?
Yes. Brokers love to say this. So basically, there's a war for talent, they say, and your office is one tool for attracting and retaining talent. And so tenants, the companies themselves, have taken note. Some landlords are also trying to, are realizing that they have to elevate the bathroom design.
Sure. All right, put up or shut up time. How are the bathrooms at the Journal?
The part of the reason for writing this is talking to designers, and just I write about you know, the office market, and I started hearing about these bathrooms, and of course the bathrooms at the Journal were not up to snuff, and I was having bathroom envy.
Goodness.
But maybe the folks upstairs read the article.
Well, here's hoping. Here's hoping. Keiko Maris covers commercial real estate for the Journal. Keiko, thanks a lot. I appreciate your time.
Thanks so much.
This final note on the way out today, another 2019 initial public offering to be on the lookout for. The co-working company WeWork said today it has filed with the Securities and Exchange Commission for an IPO. It's what's called a confidential S-1. That's the SEC form number, so no financial details. But in a recent private fundraising round, WeWork was valued at $47 billion American dollars, second in the year's IPO hit parade to Uber at like 90, 91 something. All right, we're going. The Dow basically flat today. The NASDAQ up 15 points, about a 10%. The S&P 500 up 3. That's about a 10% there. Our daily production team includes Bridget Bodner, Maria Hollenhorst, Sean McHenry, Daisy Palacios, and Daniel Shin. Our special projects desk is Tommy Andres and Eliza Mills. I'm Kai Rizdahl. We will see you tomorrow, everybody. This is APM.
The world can be a confusing place for kids, and finding the words to explain it all can be tricky, too. Introducing Million Bazillion, a Webby-winning podcast from Marketplace that takes your kids on exciting adventures to answer the awkward and complex questions they have about money. Each week, we tackle hard-hitting inquiries from kid listeners like,
what is a college account and how does it work?
I want to know what unions are and what they are for.
Why does the U.S. have so much gold in Fort Knox and what do they use it for?
Help your kids understand how money fits into the world around us. Listen to Million Bazillion wherever you get your podcasts.